What's going on, everybody? It's Travis here with the NPCs, and welcome to another weekly news roundup. It is February 3rd, 2023, and tonight we will be talking about multiple games being delayed, shut down, or canceled. What is going on this week with games right now? We'll also, of course, be talking about Microsoft may or may not be shutting down the Xbox 360 marketplace. And, of course, we'll also be talking about 343 Industries starting over with Halo and possibly taking the game into Unreal Engine 5. That and more on the NPC's Weekly News Roundup, so let's just hop right into it. My name is Travis, of course, and via Discord, the guy hiding over there behind me a little bit. Oh, there he is, right in frame now. It's Kyle. Hey, Kyle.
How's it going?
Dude, it is going weird. Like, I don't even know, like, why everything is so weird right now. I think we just need to hop into it because there's so much happening. And that is honestly the amount of news we've gotten over just the last few days alone about multiple games having been delayed, shut down, or canceled. And I have a small list going here, and I'm curious to know which ones you're surprised about here. If anything, I'm going to read these ones off. But Back 4 Blood is being shut down, more specifically the mainline support for it, as Turtle Rock moves on to their next AAA title. We have Titanfall Apex Legends crossover. Apparently, it was supposed to be set in the Apex Legends world, but was supposed to be a follow-up to Titanfall 2. It was supposed to be a single-player game. That just completely got shelved. Last of Us Part 1 on PC has been delayed until the end of March, beginning of April, after the HBO Max series ends its first season. Star Wars Jedi Survivor got pushed out by 6 weeks into April. Apex Legends Mobile is going to be sunsetting, and Battlefield Mobile isn't even going to make its way into the world. We've got Crossfire X, which was a Xbox exclusive, kind of like indie-ish title going away. Apparently, some new titles from the Coalition are going away, so they can focus on Gears 6 instead. And then PlayStation Plus Collection is also going to be going away, too. Which PlayStation Plus Collection was the PS4 titles that those on PS5 could actually get for a certain period of time. That's going away some point this year, too. Kyle, what is happening? What is going on?
I feel like each of these has their own story. And like you said, there's some we didn't even touch on. Like we were talking pre-show about Rumbleverse is getting shut down. Neither of us has necessarily played it, but that one only got launched back in August of last year. So that hasn't even had that long of a life. Of course, there have already been other ones that have been announced earlier on, in December, November, that were getting shut down. But now we look at these titles that we have right here. Back 4 Blood, I think that one's not necessarily surprising. The fan reception wasn't all that great on that one. Maybe it was just bad timing and there too much time in between doing Left 4 Dead and putting out the Back 4 Blood. I'll get back to Titanfall. Last of Us, I can maybe understand Sony wanting to potentially bank on the outcome of the HBO series, especially since, you know, after, what was it, episode 2, it was announced that season 2 has already been is in development now.
Correct.
And, they're going to be covering the second game in season 2. So, Jedi Survivor... that one, I think it's more of a polish thing than anything else. They probably have some kinks and minor issues, but that one's actually only a 6 week delay from what I understand. So that one's not super terrible. Yeah. And you look at that. I mean, when you look at the level of polish with the first game, it was, you know, just excellent and it had so much content and it was, you know, just that sweet level between a Dark Souls style game and like being a Jedi and having all the power, you know, but not necessarily quite there because, you know, you had to have challenge with the Sith. I think this game deserves that. So I'm not saying that one's necessarily a bad thing. it's kind of sad to see Apex Legends Mobile go. I felt like that one was actually kind of successful. Especially you look at the mobile market in foreign countries. Apex was one that's driven not only console, but mobile. And I think maybe that was potentially also victim of the Battlefield being canceled. And that's just fallout from the current Battlefield. I don't know. What are your thoughts on some of them so far that I've talked about?
Well, here's what I want to, like, here's what they talk about. Like, I think the big part of it this week was just the surprise announcement that Apex Legends Mobile was going to be shut down. Here's what we actually have here in our notes from Axios. Is apparently EA CEO Andrew Wilson instead indicated in a call to investors that Apex Legends Mobile's biggest problem was that it didn't feel deeply connected to the broader franchise, which I call a little bit of shenanigans on, because it basically is like it's definitely monetized in the sense of like what a mobile game would be. Like you go in and look at the game, like especially when it comes up, you get like three advertisements for things you can buy or a link to go visit the in-game store to go spend credits or other in-game currency to go do stuff before you even get to the screen to start a match up. So it follows the same scheme of like regular mobile pay-to-win games. They go on here to say players of a mobile version of a big series want to either compete against their PC console counterparts or at least feel like progressing in one version of the game benefits them in the other. And that again came from the CEO of EA, Andrew Wilson. And apparently, that Battlefield Mobile was set to actually run the same way. And they even make a good point in this Axios article here too. And that's one of those things that I also see as well, is that if you're going to develop a mobile title for your game, like let's just say like we had a Halo Mobile, let's just say we had a Gears of War Mobile, let's just say we had anything, right. Assassin's Creed Mobile, because we've got that Assassin's Creed game coming out sometime here soon too. The fact that there's a lot of cross-platform games that exist out there anyway, and that people are playing games on mobile and then moving towards console or PC, especially when they're settled in nice and neat at home, they want to be able to continue playing the game just as they had, or be able to bring those unlocks over that they have from a version of the game elsewhere, especially mobile. And one of the games that happens to do that, one for one, is Genshin Impact. The same game you play on mobile is the same game you play on PC. And so all of the things you earn while you're just out and about on the go carry over and you just pick up right where you left off on your computer. That's not to say, of course, you know, like for the example with Steam Deck, with their new cloud save functionality, like I know they gave it a different term for cloud saves with the Steam Deck. I can't remember what the name of it was. But you know what I'm talking about, though, that you could play a game on your Steam Deck, and as soon as you go to lock it, the game saves itself. As long as it's connected to Wi-Fi, it will save itself to the cloud, and then you bring that game up on your computer, you should be able to pull that save in with relative ease. So,
but even then, there are still some limitations. So.
I agree. There are things that aren't going to carry over all the way, but the idea, though, still stands, that you want the experience to be near seamless, and especially for something as big as Apex Legends, where there's a lot to unlock and carry over. Do you really want to play a game where you start over on like different things? Like, especially if you've got a bunch of unlocks on the PC game or on the console game, do you want to have to start over to get those unlocks in the
I could understand, you know, having separate battle passes for each of the different types, because I personally, if I'm playing on mobile, do not want to play against a PC player, even if I'm using a controller, because you just don't have the same advantage. And a lot of times, if you're caught trying to use a mouse and keyboard on a mobile game like Apex or Call of Duty Mobile, you get banned anyway. So the playing field's not level. But beyond that, I mean, I feel like, all the unlocks should be seamless, even if it is a different battlefield. There's no reason they shouldn't be. It's the same characters. It's technically the same game, besides, like I said, potentially being a different battlefield or battleground that you're on, albeit maybe a little bit smaller. I don't know if it was on mobile or not.
It was the same. It was one for one.
Oh, so that, and that makes it even more so why there shouldn't be.
I think the bigger
reason,
the bigger difference with the mobile side of it, though, more specifically, was the that they rotated in older maps that you didn't get to see rotated in as often on the PC version. That was one of the big selling points of the game to bring people in, was that you not only could take Apex with you on the go, but that you got to play on more of those, like on more of the maps that already exist, instead of waiting on them to re-enter some sort of rotational pool or come back from the vault or whatever you want to call it in the regular release of the game. But so even so on that, I guess what I'm more curious about than anything, like that I'm more surprised about actually kind of jumping here on the list. Like, I'll admit, I had never heard of Crossfire X. That's probably my bad, just not hearing about that
one.
It was
an interesting one.
But it was that the Coalition was working on two other titles, and it didn't exactly indicate what those titles were going to be, other than it was that they were working on some sort of new IP, and that they were... apparently they actually helped Epic Games work on, and this is from the Video Games Chronicle article we're referencing. It says the Matrix Awakens Unreal Engine 5 tech demo. So the Coalition actually had their hands in helping with some of that, which is kind of crazy. But the fact, though, they were hit by the layoffs, the Coalition was, when Microsoft announced all of their layoffs. But the fact, though, that they've now basically pushed everybody in from this one, you know, from these three separate games into just now focusing on Gears 6, whatever that's going to be. And I was a little surprised. Now I'm even more curious to know what they could have potentially been working on. Like, were they going to finally just shift away from stuff in the Gears franchise? Were they going to develop something else newer, you know, or were they going to support other teams out there?
That's one I was really curious about. Because they haven't put out a Gears game in a few years. And I want to say here, what was it, like 3 years ago, maybe 2 years ago, even the Gears Pop game on mobile was completely shut down. So
I forgot about
what
that
we
one,
have
yeah.
for. Yeah, what we have for Gears is, I mean, Gears 5 and all the previous iterations, you know, that had launched before, and not even, if I'm not mistaken, not all of them are available on PC. So there's a lot to be said there. It makes me wonder if maybe there was some sort of, you know, PC port in development, or, you know, or an iteration of some of the ones that aren't on PC to be ported and put out. But maybe they won't see the light of day because of these cancellations from the games from the Coalition, which is sad. But on the other hand, I really do like the Gears of War games, and I'd like to see the next one come out. So if they could buckle down and, you know, put out another quality Gears game, then I would be happy.
Yeah. I would be curious to. I'm still just genuinely curious, though, to know what else they may have worked on, though. You know, because the idea, though, that they helped with that Matrix tech demo for Unreal Engine 5 is pretty slick, especially because of how in depth that demo was and the level of detail that Epic actually showed off within that engine itself.
Well, and, you know, when you consider some of the stuff that has been recently uncovered, and this is more specifically targeting Nintendo, by Did You Know Gaming, that maybe they had, you know, other titles completely in the works, you know, just from that tech demo, because they got unleashed on that one thing, and they were like, oh, well, see what kind of projects you can come up with it, you know, outside of the tech demo. And, you know, all of a sudden those are getting shut down, because maybe we could have seen a new Matrix Online game. Maybe we could have seen a, you know, new Path of Neo game. That would have been really cool. But who's to say now, because it's completely gone.
Yeah, agreed. And I think that demo anyway was built out to just kind of coincide with the fourth Matrix movie there. So needless to say, it was still a good one to at least use as an example. And then another interesting one here in our list, though, I know it's not a game, but it's a collection of games, and that's the PlayStation Plus collection. Again, so when the PlayStation 5 came out in 2020, this was a set made available to those who had PlayStation Plus subscriptions. And so those games included things such as Bloodborne, Days Gone, Detroit Become Human, God of War, Infamous Second Son, Ratchet and Clank, The Last Guardian, Last of Us Remastered, Until Dawn, Uncharted 4, and then, you know, those are all first-party PlayStation titles. Third-party stuff was like Batman Arkham Knight, Battlefield 1, Call of Duty Black Ops 3, Crash Bandicoot Insane Trilogy, Fallout 4, Final Fantasy 15, Monster Hunter World, Mortal Kombat 10, and Resident Evil 7. Now,
that's an excellent game collection just to start out. I mean, if you didn't have anything to play and didn't want to buy a game right away, you could sit for an entire year on just those games alone.
Yeah, no kidding, especially because you've definitely got more games that are definitely like single-player games on here, but you have a couple at least that could be considered multiplayer, and you know, at least a few of them here. So at least it gave you a nice variety of things to at least play on there. Now, of course, we're entering the third year of the PlayStation 5 anyway, and now this is one of those that's going to be going away. Now, the interesting question, though, is whether or not you have these games downloaded, if it's going to act similar to Game Pass, where when they sunset stuff off of just Game Pass for the time being, does the game stay installed on your machine, but you just can't play it anymore? You know, does it have some sort of authentication against it to allow you to keep playing it if it, you know?
It sounds like that won't be the case. When they sunset the PlayStation Plus collection, it will disable it in your system, from what I understand.
Sorry, I thought the stream just kind of went all belly up here. Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, we're cool. We're still live here. Anyway, sorry. So the link here, actually, the stuff with IGN actually says it right in the first paragraph. It says, however, members can still redeem the titles from the collection until that date, which is May 9th, and then continue to access them afterward as long as they remain subscribers to the service. So as long as you download all those to your machine and remain a PlayStation Plus subscriber, you'll still be authenticated to be able to play those.
Nice. Well, but, and here's the other side that I was going to say, though. Even though that they are sunsetting the project, you also have to consider the fact that they're raising the cost of the console in all countries except for the United States by $50. And really and truly, when you think about it, they're doing it in the United States too. They're just giving you a download code for a game. So it's coming. Things are going to get, you know, a little bit tighter on Sony's end just to buckle down, because they are generating more users on their end that have PlayStation 5s, and they don't necessarily need to rely on this crutch to hold those users down and to hold them on the console. They have their own library that's substantial now, so they don't need the backup library of games just for those, you know, users that you subscribe to play. So
yeah,
we're far enough along.
True, but I guess circling around at least here on that first one in the list, Back for Blood, that game has now been out since October 2021 and has had three content packs released for it. This last one dropped actually in December, and Turtle Rock came out and said that is the last one that they're doing, and that they are not saying that Back for Blood is dead per se, but because of Turtle Rock being the size that it is, they have to basically shift all of their focus over to whatever new title that they're working on, which they say is what they are, what they're doing. They're still going to support Back for Blood, but we're not going to see anything content-wise. I assume we're going to see more like quality of life improvements, patches, fixes, and things like that for a certain period of time. But the majority of work that Turtle Rock's going to be doing now is on their next title. So
see, and
that's
the one thing I will say that this is awful reminiscent of from Turtle Rock is Evolve.
Yeah, but Evolve didn't really have much going for it. Like, it started off strong, but then it really went by the wayside, where it seems like Back 4 Blood has actually kind of held its position rather well compared to that game.
Well, and, you know, it did get, just like Back 4 Blood, because of some of the gameplay aspects, it got a lot of negative player feedback, especially early on, about wait times to play as the monster, and the fact that once the season passes came out, it was an egregious amount of money to pick up one different specific monster, but then after a while, they were basically giving them all away for free. And I think it wasn't even too long after that that they actually shut down the server, so it kind of makes me fearful for what Back 4 Blood has coming, but I don't know. Like I said, it did have negative fan feedback, because I think a lot of people were expecting more of a Left 4 Dead, and it was just too much or too little too late.
Maybe. But even so, like with Back 4 Blood, with everything they put out with it, we played, I would say, quite a bit. I don't think we didn't check out any of the newer content added to it, but it was definitely enjoyable. I think it was actually a pretty good experience for it. There were a few things there that, you know, it's like I think we kind of jumped into it with the expectation of kind of like going into like Left 4 Dead 3 almost, but of course it had its own unique take on it though. And I would say, you know, we put quite a bit of time into it, at least at the initial run. But one article I did read about all of that shutdown stuff, though, especially like with Back 4 Blood, really more than anything, is that not every game has to be a Fortnite. Not every game has to be something that just continues on forever and ever, especially something like that. And at some point in time, Back 4 Blood's going to be, it's going to have its online component shut down. You know, we're going to see that part of it sunset completely, and support will completely go away. But until that time, I mean, at least there's still a game you can get into with people and play. I mean, you know, maybe they won't sunset the servers and it'll be just like Left 4 Dead, where you can just hop on whenever you want and play it. When that game came out in, what, 2007? You know, there's still a lot of there's still a lot of people who want to play things like that. So maybe there could be something there, too. But until that happens, at least, you know, we have to just wait and see. But
now,
yeah,
the one that I saved for last.
Oh, yeah. Talk about it.
The Titanfall Apex Legends crossover.
Dear God, that one hurt.
Ah, man, that was like seriously gut-wrenching. Someone stabbed me in the chest. Why did they even have to mention that there was a game coming out?
Yes.
They should have not even said anything and just silently let it go away with a whimper, you know? Because mentioning it, I think this might ignite flames for fans.
Yeah, so here's what it said here in the article from Kotaku about it. It says the game would have taken place in a shared universe between Titanfall 2 and Apex Legends, two acclaimed Respawn Entertainment shooters with lots of similarities that have seen plenty of fan speculation about overlapping lore in the past. Unlike the popular free-to-play Battle Royale, however, it was apparently planned as a single-player campaign. So the game was actually supposed to be called Titanfall Legends. That was how they were going to be kind of doing the cross here. The article goes on to say, unfortunately, Bloomberg reports that the team of about 50 developers who were working on it were informed on Tuesday that the project had been cut. While the company would look for other positions to move the impacted staff to, anyone without a new position would be laid off. So, man, Titanfall, just Respawn really got its ass handed to it, in a manner of speaking, just because not only was Jedi Survivor delayed, which is being made by Respawn, but you also had whatever support they were probably providing on Battlefield Mobile as well, too, which I'm sure they probably were, because Respawn seems to be helping out a lot around there. You've got Apex Legends Mobile, of course. That's just another one going down. It's interesting, and I have one thing, though, to bring up to you, Kyle, before you carry on, you know, with your misery and woe that is not getting another Titanfall single-player game, because I'm right there with you. I was having a conversation with my kid yesterday, and he was going on to show me that some of the new skins, some of these new like high level skins in Apex Legends, are actually Titan pilot suits for all of the different characters, and they're all like they're all you know, like in the style of like I guess what you'd expect to see maybe for the character if they were a pilot, for example. The only one that stands out looking more like a regular pilot suit is Bangalore. I guess you go through like a tiered system to actually unlock everything. But by the end of it, with the helmet and the actual jumpsuit and everything there, she looks like a Titan pilot. And
oh wow,
a lot of the characters are getting those too. Not all of them, I don't think, but a good chunk of them are. And so it just leads me to believe that maybe it is true that it's like, you know, if this is actually the case that Titanfall Legends was happening, what if we were starting to see some of that kind of culminate into what that crossover could have been? Not only with that, but there was the rumor of a character that you could play as that actually had a Titan as a ultimate ability. Obviously, of course, they brought in Ash, who died in Titanfall 2, and, you know, made her a part of the storyline as well in the campaign, or not the campaign, but in the actual game itself in Apex. Just a lot of stuff, especially, has happened. And so,
right.
Yeah, man. But anyway.
That's just the gut wrencher, because, I've been on a podium for Titanfall 2 ever since it launched, and you know, we've had our woes, especially in the last probably 8 months, trying to play multiplayer and having no success on PC, and it's awful because the game is great. Even just the Harvester defense mode, it's like a really chill 4-player 20-minute match. You know, if you just have 20 minutes to kill, it's just fun. And you know, not only that, the single player story for the game is excellent, and I've been literally dying for another Titanfall story, considering the first game was a multiplayer game only. So please stop this and give us a new Titanfall game.
No kidding. That's all I wish for, too, is like, I would love a new Titanfall game, but I just don't know what's going to happen. It seems like maybe, maybe not. I don't know. Man. Well, that's at least it in the larger list of things that are going on. I mean, we're used to cancellations. We're used to delays on things like that. But it seemed like there were a couple things here, especially in the news, that just hit hard, that they all had to be summed up in just the first one going into this week. So, Jesus Christ. But let's take that woe and move it into something else, Kyle, because I think this will make us even feel older, though, too. And that is that Microsoft may or may not be shutting down the Xbox 360 marketplace. So this was actually posted just yesterday. So there was a list that went up that said these games are going to be getting removed from the Xbox 360 marketplace. However, Wario64 posted a image on his Twitter stating, and this was directly from them. I'll switch over to the capture here for this one. This is actually a screenshot from the Xbox support page that says Xbox 360 Marketplace update. We'll be closing the Xbox 360 Marketplace over the next year, so we encourage you to purchase any 360 games or DLC by May 2023. So that's May of this year. And of course, the list of content that they were going to be removing was going to be, I think, like Orange Box was one of them. I think even like the standalone Left 4 Dead was another one. I mean, there were a few other like choice titles that I can remember being like the big ones back from when we were, you know, playing 360 like mainstream, the console to be on. But let's see here. I don't know. Let's see. Yeah, they actually did update it here. Let me see if I can get the list here of what's actually being removed from ours. Yeah, so here's the games that are being removed really quick, Kyle. I'll read off the titles here for you. Aegis Wings, Assassin's Creed, Brotherhood 3, 4, and Liberation HD, Blood of the Werewolf, Blue Dragon, Break Dawn, Call of Duty Advanced Warfare, and Ghosts, Castle Crashers, wow, that's a shock, Cloning Clyde, Counter-Strike GO, Dark Souls, Darksiders 2, Daytona USA, Defense Grid, Eats Chowdown, Far Cry 2, Final Fight, DBL Impact, Iron Brigade, Jerry McGrath's Off Road, Jet Set Radio, Left 4 Dead 1 and 2, Limbo, Lost Odyssey, Mass Effect 2, Monopoly Deal, Mutant Blobs Attack, N Plus, Outpost, Kaloki X, Peggle 2, Phantom Breaker Battlegrounds, Prince of Persia, Ruse, Sega Vintage Collection, Alex Kidd and Co., Skate 2, South Park Stick of Truth, Spelunky, Splinter Cell Conviction, Star Wars Battlefront, Star Wars KOTOR 2, The Orange Box, The Raven Episode 1, and The Witcher 2. But that was what the they gaffed on is that they were going to do it. However, they came back later and said, the message was posted in error. We can confirm the Xbox 360 marketplace will not close in May of 2023. As a reminder, beginning on February 7th, 2023, a limited set of games, add-ons, and in-game content will no longer be purchasable in select markets via the Xbox 360 store. That's via a Microsoft spokesperson. Kyle, I can say personally that, like, after the PlayStation 2, the Xbox 360 was my next console. That was what happened. I got one used from a friend. It unfortunately was one of the ones that was susceptible to the red ring of death, and it did finally red ring on me. That was not fun. But the key thing, though, is that, like, I mean, Xbox 360 has been going on since, what, 2005, 2004? Maybe 2005.
I think it's, like, I think it's a 2005.
But
that,
like,
sounds about right. Maybe it was a little bit later than that. Maybe it was like 2008.
Well, that would make sense because the Xbox One came out in 2013. So they wouldn't have had 5 years just on the Xbox.
Oh, yeah.
It probably had to be 05. But needless to say,
it was 05 actually.
Okay.
November 22nd of 05.
Got it.
I was mistaken. Yeah, much earlier.
All right, cool. I know my dates then, at least on this. but you know, it's been out that long, you know, and for the fact that it's, like, it's been supported as long as it has been, it's kind of cool, but obviously things have to give. But I still find it a shock, especially though, like, games obviously need to be sunset off of marketplaces anyway, though, too, over time, just because of, you know, you only have so many people playing a console. Like, I can't remember the last time I actually touched an Xbox 360. But, like, what's your take on, like, that gaffe, though? Do you think that was just more of a, like, not even just an error, but someone kind of just jumped the gun to say that this was going to be happening, or
I think
what?
It was the person that got the message that they were supposed to make the post, misunderstood it or misread it, or maybe they were mistold the information, potentially, and... Yeah, to make that major of a gaffe, I think that's what potentially had happened, and that's why we were seeing the panic buying and everything, because, it was just interpreted completely wrong.
Oh, yeah,
I mean,
I agree.
Especially when you hear some of the names of those games, it's like nails on a chalkboard. Like, that shouldn't happen. That's like the sunset of a console entirely when you hear those titles. Left 4 Dead... Left 4 Dead 2, Castle Crashers.
That one hurts.
Games that, like, people immediately want to get on and play on that console. When those are getting taken off, the console is officially dead.
Yeah, like, they're, like, especially reading that Castle Crashers and N Plus were on there, that kind of hurt me a little bit, because as soon as as I'm reading it off to you, I was picturing it in my head at the same time, was having my MP3 player plugged into my Xbox 360 and being able to use the in console like music player to actually have music going at the same time as I'm playing through these other games. Like, you know, the fact that it's like my music, like even like Geometry Wars is a good example, is that my music would overwrite Geometry Wars music and that I would listen to what I normally listen to, but I wouldn't hear the music from, like, in the game. You know, I just listened to my music that I wanted to actually hear. And it was nice because then I go to a friend's house, I'd plug into their Xbox 360 with it, and we could have the same music going for something else too. You know, just kind of having that all-in-one experience. So by seeing N Plus and Castle Crashers on there, it really threw me off. Like, I was not expecting those to be there at all. But you're right, though, that, like, you know, having those games off there kind of, like, hits it hard, but at the same time, we're also talking about a console that's what, 10, 15, 18 years old now?
Yeah, this is also true. And, I mean, a lot of these titles aren't even being downloaded any longer necessarily on the 360s, a lot of people that are playing on 360s continuously now are more so your people that are playing the single player console games. I feel like they're not necessarily going out and downloading new titles, you know, or going out of their way to, unless, you know, they're just rounding out the end of their collection type thing.
Yeah, like who, like, I can't imagine many people are booting up an Xbox to play a multiplayer game unless maybe they're having a LAN party for, like, nostalgia's sake, you know, getting all the Xboxes together to just play something locally.
Right.
I can't imagine that, though, you know, actually happening. But at the same time, yeah, I really do agree, though, that you're probably right that it is for a lot of those single-player titles that you know, you can't experience elsewhere. I mean, I know there's backwards compatibility in the Xbox One and the Xbox Series S, or X, excuse me, just because it has the disc drive. But maybe sometimes there is that case, though, where it's like you need that unique experience playing on the original console to do that, just like you would like it plugging a cartridge into a Super Nintendo. You know, same thing applies. You can play it on an emulator, but there's something different when you're actually playing on an original console.
Right.
So, I guess with that, though, Kyle, like, what, like, do you think maybe we'll see this announcement potentially come back up again this time instead, that maybe May is the exact date that we're going to start seeing it, but they'll decide to announce, like, maybe in March? Like, they'll come back around in another month and a half and say, oh, yeah, just kidding, we were serious. You guys have till May to do this, then we're going to shutter the marketplace.
I mean, on the other hand, yeah, I mean, it wouldn't be the first time that someone... or a company has done something like this to gauge the reaction and to gauge the outcry, you know, for how long after the effect or after the announcement type thing, to see what, you know, they can make plans for. You know, oh, well, there was a lot of, you know, outcry for the 360 to stay open, you know, over the course of 2 weeks, so maybe we should just leave it open for an entire year and let people download stuff. Or, you know, we haven't really heard a lot, you know, on our side. So perhaps it is time to actually make that call in May and start sunsetting the services.
Yeah, because I think if Marketplace goes away, I mean, I can't imagine you could pay for Xbox Live on an Xbox 360 much anymore. So, especially with a lot of things rolling into Game Pass and Game Pass Ultimate, but I don't know. It's going to happen no matter what. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Part of me is just like, you know, I look at this picture of the 360 and the article itself, and just it makes me think back to a lot of those things there with the Marketplace especially, or even just being able to, you know, just playing games on it though too. So, I don't know. Just a wave of nostalgia for it. But, yeah, needless to say, as of right now, at least that date is an error, but it's very possible that we could see, who knows, maybe like we were just saying there, maybe they'll come back in March or April and just say, haha, just kidding. You know, I guess, again, just like always, we'll wait and see. In the meantime, though, let's move on here to our next story on the list, and that is about Sony and the PSVR 2. God, we're just delivering bad news all day today. So apparently there was a... there was a story that came out of Bloomberg that said that that Sony had cut or reduced its production order for PSVR 2 headsets based on the amount of pre-orders that had already been done for the nearly $600 headset. However, Sony has come back and refuted that claim, saying that they have not cut the PlayStation VR 2 production numbers, and saying that it is seeing enthusiasm from PlayStation fans for the upcoming launch, which includes more than 30 titles such as Gran Turismo 7, Horizon Call of the Mountain, and Resident Evil Village. So I guess they were dropping it to from about 2 million to anywhere from 1 to 1.5 million is what they had there in their production run. But that still brings back the question that we've talked about anyway, Kyle, even with this. Or even going back on this, is that the PlayStation VR 2 is going to cost more than the console that you need to use to support it. It doesn't have backwards compatibility with original PSVR titles. You're going to have to buy those all over again if they get remade, like Beat Saber, for example, is getting remade. And then you can't use it on anything else except the the PlayStation 5. Like, are we going to finally see Sony just cave on this and finally open up and say, yeah, we're going to offer PC support for it, you know, at some point in time? Or are they really expecting people who just went and spent $500 for a console to go spend $600 more for a VR headset?
The idea of them to do that would be awful nice, but I feel like this is Sony. It's a peripheral, or, you know, another system that doesn't, I mean, it supports their mainline system, but it doesn't stand on its own. So Sony isn't going to support it either. And that's what I'm really, truly afraid of. I mean, you saw it with the PSP. You saw it with the Vita. You saw it with the PlayStation, with the first PlayStation VR headset. And I think we're going to see it again, unfortunately, with the VR too. They do have some strong games coming out with the opening lineup, but the fact still stands that, yeah, it's a $600 headset, and right now there's a lot of people that just don't have $600 to spend, especially if they just bought a $500 console. You know, you bring that $1,100 up, and all of a sudden they could have bought a really, really inexpensive gaming PC and been playing more. So I don't know. It's kind of a hard ground to break, I think, and that's one of the big upsets that I think a lot of people are going to be seeing now.
Here, sorry, I forgot I had muted because I was coughing there too. yeah, no, you're right. Is that I agree with all of that. That there's something about the idea that you're right, that you could go buy an affordable gaming PC that has support for a VR headset, or go buy something like the Quest 2. Even though that went up in price, you know, maybe you're going to be roughly spending about the same as you would if you bought a PS5 and a PSVR 2. But you're also looking at the utility of it, though, as well, that you can play potentially more titles, not be locked into an ecosystem, and then have something like the Quest 2, or go, you know, find a used, like, a Valve Index, or even a Vive Pro. You know, go find something used there potentially, mm-hmm. if you're one to actually go through the used market, and be able to actually cover yourself in that regard. You know, be able to play all those different titles and have a different experience instead of being locked into one ecosystem. Because can you imagine spending $600 and then finding out that, oh yeah, we're not going to do anything else with the PSVR 2. Now it's just become something that sits there and can only work for like 10 games on one system.
Right, and that's the other thing. Yeah, they have the 30 games announced. How many of them are going to actually come out? Even if all 30 of them come out, how many of them are going to be actually quality games, or full-length quality games for that matter? When you know, yeah, you may have spent a little bit more or the same amount on a PC and a used headset or an Oculus, but, you know, every other month or every 3 months, on some online retailer, like Humble Bundle or Fanatical or Gamers Gate, they have a bundle where you can get, you know, 6 VR games, 8 VR games for $25-$30. And yeah, you might get 2 or 3 stinkers in them, but most of them are going to be really good VR games, and you're going to have fun with them.
Yeah, exactly. And the other part too is that, like, the cross support for the VR headsets, especially like the my Quest 2, for example, I can play games through Steam VR, so I'm not isolated to just the single platform. Like, I can play games wirelessly, right, on my headset, and I can go and do all the different things there, no problem. But for other things, sure, I have to plug a cable into my computer. Now I could play Half-Life Alyx without having a dedicated PC specific VR headset. You know, I get the best of both worlds with it. That's just the thing. That's why it really still makes me wonder, though. I know you're still kind of up in the air about which VR headset, like, you want, because mm-hmm. there's more that keeps on getting announced, and you're just like,
oh yeah,
man, it's like the screen's amazing. Yeah. And the idea, though, that is, like, if Sony decides to limit the PlayStation VR 2 specifically to just being for the PlayStation 5, they are going to have a big problem with, I think, retention, or at least being able to actually sell the thing. Sure, you can have people go and pre-order it, but the article actually made a good point about the fact, though, that we are in the midst of this potential recession. Nobody's going to go spend $600 on a headset to do this, and you're going to have stock that sits there. It's going to have to go on sale. Sony's going to lose money, so they're going to have to recoup it. Why don't they just try to recoup it by opening it up possibility, you know, to the possibility of of PC support? And then for the games they are releasing on PC, you know, maybe they could drop the VR version of it on PC as well, too. You may not get the full experience like you would expect to have on PlayStation 5, maybe because of some of those nuances, but the it's still there. That's still an option for them. So them cutting the production stuff, okay, I only slightly believe that they would, but my concern, though, is that they are limiting themselves and it's going to cause pain points down the road because I can't afford a $600 headset. So,
yeah, and I really hope they don't, you know, go the same route that they've, like I said, went with the PSP, with the Vita, with the previous headset, right, and they do continue to support it because they do have really quality, strong hardware from everything that's been shown. You know, especially with the room tracking and everything. I think it's probably some of the best I've seen out there thus far. But, you know, they are going up against, you know, all these other competitors that have well-established libraries, that have the accessibility to go on multiple different platforms or multiple different storefronts, or, you know, utilize even beyond the storefronts, you know, online retailers to gain access to far less expensive games and a far vaster library.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah,
it'll be interesting. I think they do have to play it real close to the plate, but I don't want them to see, or I don't want to see them stop supporting it like they have everything else they put out, excluding their mainline console.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So if they do end up deciding to slash, obviously we'll probably see how that goes, especially with availability. But at the same time, you know, maybe we will see that happen, though, where they just they over assumed that so many people are going to be buying it, and now we've got things going on discount relatively quick, and then maybe open PC support. But again, a wait and see approach here on this one too. So as we wait and see on that, we're going to move into our last mainline story for the week, and that is about 343 Industries. 343 Industries being the primary developer now for anything Halo. Turns out that they are probably going to be starting from scratch with Halo and potentially moving over to Unreal Engine instead of using their in-house tool. So Bloomberg has been on a roll reporting on a lot of this stuff. You could probably thank Jason Schreier for all that. But apparently sources for Bloomberg had claimed, and this is from this article from Engadget, claimed 343 is effectively restarting Halo development between multiple changes that include the loss of at least 95 jobs, including directors and key contractors. Notably, the studio is reportedly switching to Epic's Unreal Engine after both a leadership shuffle and struggling with its aging in-house platform. It's even breaking from its familiar story-driven gameplay, according to the tipsters. So the in-house engine and tool set is known as Slipspace. And I thought it was Slipstream, but I must have mixed that up with something else. Slipspace. And that apparently, that tool set, I guess, has been evolved and adapted since the likes of Halo 4. And it's not to say that, you know, like, I mean, Halo Infinite looks great. Don't get me wrong. But obviously something's got to give. And what I see here, especially, like, looking at you know, like what Unreal can deliver on, like Kyle, what you and I talked about just previously with the Matrix demo. Yes, thank you. With what we can actually see out of that, plus all of the mainline support that Unreal Engine gets anyway, especially when it comes to their support for lighting, for ray tracing, for their particle textures, for really just about anything. I mean, you look at like engines and that, you know, we think Unity for some things, you know, but Unreal really is one of those top open engines out there that anybody can start using. And you can get it for free. Of course, if you're a studio like 343, you're going to have to pay. So if something's not working, obviously, you know, it makes sense to kind of move into potentially other territory. But then in tandem with that, though, too, apparently there's been a game that's been getting worked on for a while anyway using Unreal already. And we've talked about it previously, Kyle, the Tatanka Halo game, the one that's supposedly supposed to be the Halo Battle Royale.
Right.
But apparently they just haven't... they just, you know, it seems like that's the way they're going to go. But obviously we haven't heard anything about what Tatanka could be, whether that's just the code name for the Battle Royale or that's the code name for this all new refresh using Unreal 5. So what do you think about them, though, finally ditching internal tools and going with more of a commercial product?
You know, maybe it's something they should have looked at earlier on. I mean, who knows? It could have avoided what was the brute's name
Craig.
Early on. Yeah, maybe it could have avoided the whole Craig the Brute situation. But I mean,
oh yeah,
they played into it, which is still pretty funny, I think. But really and truly, I mean, it is a dated engine. On the other hand, Bethesda's used the same engine for how long now?
That's true.
Unreal's a really strong engine. And the fact that they've been potentially toying with the idea of switching over to it for so long, I think the thing that really put them at fault is they should have either switched to it a while ago or honestly opened it up faster for people to play around in Forge to get more content out, to be able to learn more about the game. So maybe they could have the support of, you know, amateur programmers giving back to the game that they love. But I think they're quite beyond that, unfortunately, now. And the fact that they are looking at Unreal 5, maybe it's a good step for them, honestly.
You know, I think that's actually probably the case, though, too. Yeah, that they're looking at Unreal Engine 5 and that, yeah, you're right. I think they should have started on this sooner. And my guess is they probably did. They probably looked at it, not necessarily at the onset of developing Infinite, but more like maybe part of the way through, that it's like, we're running into difficulties with this. Someone mock up something in Unreal Engine 5 and let's just see what comes across with it. And maybe that's where they started to realize that that's where some of those problems were at. And I think you're right, though, too, that Forge being delayed really prevented some of those key fan-supported maps from actually coming out, because, you know, we don't have the community maps being rotated yet. You know, that, I assume that's still coming down the line here at some point in time, too. But
I would like to hope.
Yeah, but the idea, though, still that, you know, there were a lot of hang-ups, though, especially on Slipspace, that they still decided to keep using it. And it's, again, it's not to say that Infinite looks bad in any way, shape, or form. It does look good. Like, I played the game on my 4K TV from start to finish for the campaign, and it looked just fine. You know, it looked great for a Halo game. But obviously some things have to give, and you can only do so much with aging tech before it becomes a problem, not necessarily just for your developers, but for your audience, especially with Forge, because Forge had to be built in Slipspace too.
Right. And that's another thing that kind of scares me about, you know, them switching over to Unreal. I know the utilities and stuff are quite a bit easier to use than, you know, a lot of other engines out there. However,
yeah,
you know, how well does it translate from the Slipspace engine to Unreal? And, you know, how quickly can they translate all the information that they've already put out currently to that new engine? Or, you know, are we going to just see an entirely new version of the game come down the pipeline, you know, in a year, and it's going to be some sort of Halo Infinite Redux or something like that?
I get where you're going, but I don't think that's going to be the case. I don't think Infinite's going to change engines completely like that. I don't think we're going to see anything there. Maybe they work something into the launcher, perhaps, where maybe like something else gets included that runs in Unreal, but it's more of like how you have like your campaign, multiplayer, Forge options right there in the menu when you start up the game. But I don't see it as being a full rewrite, rework of Infinite going into Unreal Engine. It looks like, based on what I'd seen, especially in like other articles out there about this, that it's going to be more of a redo of Halo in general. and whether or not they're going to continue with the story of Master Chief, whether they're going to pick up from Halo Infinite, whether they're going to do something brand new, like they're going to retcon the entire universe and start over with Halo 1. There's no indication exactly what that's going to be like, especially because we don't know any details about what this Tatanka build is supposed to be like anyway. But the fact, though, that, you know, the fact that they've spent so much time trying to work through all the bugs and issues with Slipspace and to deliver, like, they took forever to deliver mainline content. You know, it's like something's going to have to give, and it's like, well, okay, we're going to just have to start over. You know, let's start with a blank slate. We know what we have. We know what we've built. What can we take from that to make in Unreal to be able to basically deliver the experience that people know and love? And, you know, if Unreal was some brand new engine out there, I'd be a little bit concerned. But it's not. It's something that's been proven and has been developed on and has been refreshed and enhanced every single release. It's just going to be time to see exactly what comes of it. But I don't think we're going to see that in the next year. I guarantee, though, because they've already, it already seems like they've canceled, you know, there's not going to be any single player DLC. We're not going to see any expansion or anything right now. There's not going to be anything. It looks like if there's anything multiplayer wise, it's going to be probably more just like generated maps and like community generated maps, or more like 343 generated maps using Forge. And then some other like limited time things though too. But for the actual evolution of the story itself as a whole, it's going to be several years down the line in the Unreal Engine, no matter what.
Yeah.
I don't think we're going to see anything next year at all. I think we're just going to see constant standard content updates for Halo Infinite multiplayer, and that's really it.
Or, you know, maybe there is a way for them to just use the Unreal Engine as a plug-in and crutch off of it, so maybe the Unreal Engine can do the heavy lifting at you know, with less effort than the Slipspace engine, and it ends up being a packet download, yes, but overall ends up benefiting the game overall just immediately. Who knows?
Yeah, no kidding. So that's it, though, on the mainline stories, though, for tonight. And that's where we take us into Kyle's section of the weekly news roundup to wrap things up. That is known as the quest marker. So, Kyle, what do we have in this week's quest markers?
So, for our first stop in the quest markers, Sony says 30% of PS5 players never played via PS4. It seems that Sony may be bringing in quite a few new players into their ecosystem with the PS5. In Sony's Q3 2020 presentation, they stated that, quote, nearly 30% of PS5 users, nearly 30% of PS5s are users who never used PS4. So with the spread of PS5, the acquisition of the new users is a progression, end quote. But is it really? When, according to VGC, the data was extrapolated based on Sony's definition of monthly active users as an estimate total number of unique accounts that played games or used services on PSN during the last month or quarter. So, basically, that necessarily means that it could just be new accounts or new accounts generated on a PS5 that someone already had accounts on. I know a lot of people that use secondary accounts, say, in Overwatch or Call of Duty, just because they want to play with their friends and not affect their ranked play. So that could be a big part of it, Sony. Aside from that, given region-specific titles and other games within a single household, a single PS5 could have more than one account, which contributes to the statistics mentioned by Sony. So, like I said, of course, aside from, you know, single users having one account, who's to say all of a sudden the kids want to go online, or, you know, the wife wants to make a user account to play I don't know, Call of Duty all of a sudden because she has a hankering to kill zombies or something on an older version. I don't know. But at any rate, Sony does say that PlayStation 5 is, or PlayStation 5 users are up 30%. In the next quest marker for the evening, PS5 beta system update adds support for Discord, finally. Sony has shared details on its upcoming beta system update, including support for Discord voice chat. Per the PlayStation blog, you can now join Discord voice chats on your PS5 to indicate that you've shared access with PS5 console and easily chat with friends on most other gaming platforms. They go on to indicate that if you've shared access with Discord previously, specifically for sharing what game you're playing, you may need to reconnect to update your permission so you can join voice chat on the console. Also included in the update is support for variable refresh rate on the 1440p monitors, accessibility and ease of use feature, game capture via command, and more. Of course, you can check out PlayStation's blog for the larger breakdown. But one other thing that's rumored to have come down the pipeline is wireless controller updates. That if you didn't necessarily get it in this beta update, if you're a member of the beta access, it should actually be launching here shortly globally, I guess, for everyone within 4 weeks, something like that. So you should be able to actually update your controller wirelessly without having to plug it in any longer. And in our last quest marker for the evening, Redfall will require an online connection to play single player. In a recently published Frequently Asked Questions on Bethesda's Redfall website, the devs have confirmed that single player will indeed require an online connection.
Boo.
Big boo. Simply put, will playing Redfall require an online connection for single player as well as co-op? A persistent online connection is required for a single player and co-op. End quote. Nothing more to say, of course. Many players have become frustrated with games that require an online connection, even if they want to play a single player component of it, or may have limited internet access and can only play single player. This appears to be a requirement of the playing any game that utilizes the ever unpopular Denuvo DRM software.
Double boo.
Denuvo, yeah, definitely. Redfall appears to be the latest one to join the list alongside Elden Ring, it'll alert and allow you to play offline regardless on Elden Ring, and Resident Evil Village, Need for Speed, and many others. Fortunately, as quite the prank, I want to say it was Wild Hearts recently came out and said that the game will launch 100% complete, will not require internet access, and will have the ability to play through the story single player 100%, as well as there won't be necessarily paid for just BS content like microtransactions, essentially. So thanks, Redfall, for making yourself a big laughing stock, I guess.
I guess so, huh?
Yeah, because I mean, if Capcom and EA can have a laugh about it, that's pretty bad.
No
when
kidding.
You know, EA wants to put loot bags and skate. So, but that is it for the quest markers for this evening.
And because that is it for the quest markers, that is it for the weekly news roundup for the week of February 3rd, 2023. Thank you so much, everybody, for joining us for this week's news roundup. Of course, if you like what you're listening to, be sure to subscribe to us on our podcast platform. Of course, you can either use our podcast platform, which is at anchor.fm/the-nbc-podcast, or use your favorite podcast platform of choice, whether it be Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and many others. So be sure to go ahead and subscribe there, so any new episode that does drop does end up on your device right when it does become available. Of course, be sure to follow us here on YouTube and follow us, of course, on social media, on Twitter and Facebook. Just search for the NPCs Podcast and you will find us. Again, thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in to this week's News Roundup. We will catch you all next week.
Bye-bye.